I think that if you, the minute you stop learning, you shut your mind. You shut your mind to picking up new things. And the only way that you're going to keep advancing in your career or you're going to be of any use to any organization is if you keep learning things.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary, and today's guest is Diana Alves, the VP of HR at Crown Capital Management, an HR strategist, AI enthusiast, and former college instructor who spent more than 20 years helping organizations and leaders reach their potential. So Diana brings a unique mix of academic insights and hands-on business experience across industries like construction, public sector, and retail. And she's been an early adopter of AI in HR. So we'll be going through talking about technology used daily across the employee experience and what the future looks like from Diana's perspective. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So you've worked in a lot of industries. So I think that's a really great context to share right off the bat, because I think it might color the rest of our conversation. Could you talk a little bit about the various industries that you've been a practitioner in?
Yeah, so I got my start in retail when I was young. I started, my very first job was at Home Depot when I was like 22. And then I stayed in retail for a bit and then transitioned into public sector. I wound up in public sector in labor relations and then found my way fully into, I worked in the medical setting for a minute, and then I wound up in immigration and law, and now I'm working in construction management. We have several different construction businesses that we work with right now. But to me, if you take all of those different experiences over the years, HR is HR. When I see different organizations say, oh, we have to have industry-specific knowledge, I can take all these different organizations and transcend that and say, you can apply scheduling from one company and put it in another company. You can take payroll from one company and put it in another company. You can take labor operations, put it in another company, because you can take all those different aspects and still apply the same theories.
So could I ask, what was the first time in your career that you actually got into HR? At Home Depot, were you already in the function, or would I have been maybe asking you for help as I'm trying to find my way through the many aisles?
It's funny, I was in the garden center when I started at Home Depot, and I was finishing up college, and they had an opening for a scheduler. And I applied for it, and I did so well in scheduling, they promoted me to an HR person. They actually had me doing some of the training corporate-wide in scheduling, because I was so good at forecasting the actual sales to the schedule. I was forecasting 98% the accuracy, because they had just introduced scheduling at the store level. And to me, it just seemed simple. And so then they're like, here, take green belt training. And I was like, oh, this sounds fun. So that's what it was. It was just that because I was so young, everything was so easy for me to adapt to. When you're in learning mode, you're like full force go. So it was easy for me to adapt the new methodology. And sometimes I think people just stop learning. And that's something I constantly kept my eyes open to. When I started working at Walmart, I had this great manager who I traveled a lot at Walmart, and I was like, I don't want to keep listening to the music stations, because I had a territory in northern Missouri and the radio stations were real spotty. And this was back whenever Sirius XM had just started and you plugged it into the radio players. And so she goes, let's do audiobooks. And so then as a group, we started listening to audiobooks. And I've never stopped doing that. Never. I still listen to Audible constantly. And it's a great habit to get into, because you constantly learn new things. And I don't just listen to work-related audiobooks. I listen to self-help. And I listen to just all kinds of randomness, because you always pick up something new that way.
So I think you've already hit on two themes. I know we're going to go deep in on. One is the similarities of the HR function, regardless of the industry that you're in. And then second, this whole concept of a learning mindset, right? And being agile with that, which is very much a key within the world of AI. Speaking of, could you tell me a little bit about the employee experience? And you have so many applications you've considered with AI technology and technology in general, or just process management, going back to scheduling and that first adoption, I guess first time you leaned into what became a career in HR. What are the major parts of the employee experience or HR feel that you feel like you've had some success in leveraging AI for?
So I don't deal with scheduling at my current job. That's something that stays in operations. But I will tell you that right off the bat, when I first even dabbled with HR or with AI, I was like, oh, my job descriptions, because my organization really didn't have a lot of job descriptions. I used to, whenever I needed to write a job description, I would go to look at another company's website and borrow it and beef it up a little bit, because it's like, this was a new field for me, construction. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go look for a project manager and borrow theirs and beef it up a little bit. Now I'm just like, I go to ChatGPT and I need a job description for a project manager, but I need a project manager in electrical with this skill set, with that skill set, with this skill set. So it pulls all that information for me, but then I can tell it, I need it to lean this way, or I need it to lean that way, and I don't need this much of this, or I need more of that. I can actually tell it to go which direction, and it produces what I need versus me borrowing other people's stuff and just guessing. That's the difference. Or whenever I need to write an email to my staff, I have a bilingual staff. I am not bilingual. I speak English. And I also have a program, a texting program. And here's the thing about text messages. In order to send out an SMS, you need to keep it in a certain amount of characters.
Right.
I say, I needed to say this in 160 characters for it to get it out. I have a mass text messaging system. I needed to say it in this many characters, and I needed to say it in two languages, and I needed to go out. That's what I needed to do. I wouldn't be able to do that otherwise.
Yeah, with the translation and also getting it under that character limit. Fun fact, that's the origin of the Twitter character limit, because back in the day when it first started, it was text messaging. People would get updates. But so you're already talking about this concept that you, without the use of the technology, like you actually got a new value unlocked. So I assume before that you were without AI, you would be just sending it in English or getting someone's help every time to translate it.
I'd be maybe Google translating it.
Yep.
And then I would spend so much more time doing things.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be able to get it to the character limits I need it to. I just say, put it in this character limit. Yeah. I'm done. It unlocks my productivity is what it does. It is. So I was on LinkedIn earlier, and this topic came up today. It was like, I see the HR professionals saying, oh, I have certain hesitations about. And I'm just like, okay, so I get your hesitations. Don't throw your entire company's trade secrets out there. Got that one. Don't do that, okay? But my hesitations aren't there because I know what I'm doing with it. I'm saying I'm going to increase my productivity with ChatGPT. I'm going to increase my productivity with these AI tools. I'm not going to throw my entire life secrets on AI. So I get where some people are hesitant, but I'm also not going to replace myself. I'm going to improve myself with AI.
Help me understand a little bit more of that other mindset that you're coming across. And what you said, you saw it on LinkedIn, right? So I think what I heard was, especially, and this is specifically about HR workflows, right? Hey, we're dealing with sensitive information, employee data. We're dealing with sensitive topics that we definitely don't want getting out. It's important to the company. Maybe there's company strategic information, not to mention personnel information that is private. And so you put all these things together for someone who's not comfortable with the nuances. I'm going to stop and pause and not lean in any particular way. Is that generally what you're hearing? Or if you think about your peers and like the general mindset in HR with and the posture towards AI, how would you classify it? And has it been changing at all?
I think with some people it's changed and with some people it hasn't. I think the fear is the proprietary information, the confidential information, that sort of stuff. I think that's where it strikes a chord with some people. But then there's people like me that understand that there's certain information you're not going to put on there. I'm using it as, like I said, an efficiency tool, because I know what I'm doing with it. I'm not going to put certain information on there. There are certain things that I'm going to leverage it for. You remember when Lotus Notes was the thing? Maybe you don't, but I do. And I'm just sitting here going, Excel's better. Smartsheet's better. Google Notes is better. There are certain things. Databases are better. You keep advancing in technology. Right. There was something my little one said to me the other day. She says, oh, were TVs still black and white when you were little?
No.
Think of the ways that technology has advanced over time. And you're sitting here going, there was a time when we didn't have smartphones. We had
hard to imagine if you're a 15-year-old.
We had Nokias. They don't even know what a floppy disk is. Yeah. These things that we just have to learn how to leverage them accordingly. I was just thinking, I made a list of things that I use ChatGPT for. I use it to fix coding and formulas. If something's broken and I'm trying to move forward on it, fix this formula for me because I need to move forward with this spreadsheet. Or if I want to run an analysis on compensation, I can say, hey, what are the means, medians, and averages on this particular role? It'll do it in this particular location. This is the greatest thing I used it for the other day. I'm looking for a particular role. And I said, give me a Boolean search for this particular niche role. It gave me the whole search term because I couldn't find that person.
Mm.
I found a couple of them.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah, I plugged it all in to Indeed. Plugged it all in, found a couple of them because I couldn't find it for the life of me.
It's like a specific qualification or certification.
Yeah,
or
it's
titles,
a particular syntax that I needed to plug in, but I couldn't find that person by just saying this and this and this. I couldn't find it. So it just gave me the whole entire syntax. I plugged it in, found like three of them.
So this is interesting.
It's worth it to steps.
Especially that last one. But I think, okay, so my observation is all these use cases, they're about taking your existing workflows, things that you're doing, what your job is already, and you're probably... For a lot of us, we're already using technology, whether it's Google or a spreadsheet or some kind of HRIS, or there's some technology you're already using. But then if you find that there's like all the micro steps within that, wait, what is the actual search I need to drop into this job search tool to help me get the candidates? Wait, to solve that problem in my brain, I can use AI to help me with that. And
right.
Or a job description. All of these are like micro steps to get to the same output that you're already doing. So in that case, it sounds like all these use cases, you're naturally abstracting the question you're asking the AI. So it's not like my company's this person, I'm looking for a title. You're asking a broad question about a formula, not like how much this person's getting paid. I think that's one clear way to stay safe. It sounds like it's like a mental governance policy you almost have for your personal use for this. So how can that translate to other use cases where it is more specific, where it doesn't include the employee PII or it does include, I don't know, the specific information about the company? Is your personal data use governance policy just to not leverage AI in those instances? Or do you make a demarcation?
I think that when I was actually discussing this the other day with somebody, I think every company probably should consider having a policy on the use of AI in their organization, how it's supposed to be used. Not every company does, but they should consider having, you know, like a lot of companies have these recording tools that automatically record the session.
Right.
And I'm just like, I know that whenever I have conference calls with my team, I'm like, I don't use that because we might have a confidential conversation. I don't want that those AI recorders recording our conversation. Who knows where that's going? If you're in a court, you have a court reporter recording that conversation, that becomes a part of a record. You don't want those things to be deposed ever. So it's that sort of stuff. You have to decide what is going to be permissible and what's not. So that's, I think, where a lot of professionals get concerned. Mm-hmm. Is permissible and what's not. So that's where I think they're going with it.
That makes sense. And it's important at a company level to have that sense of what is permissible and being proactive about that. So then, so far we've been talking about your personal HR use cases, but I think you've gone beyond that to actually leverage these tools to enable others within the org. So I know you've done some interesting things with the managers, for example. Can you share a bit about that?
Oh yeah, so I've actually taught some of my managers how to use ChatGPT in cases of rewriting documentation not everybody's got the fullest vocabulary to write documentation for disciplinary notices and that sort of stuff. So it's, if somebody sends me a disciplinary notice and says, Bob didn't do a job well. Okay, what did Bob do wrong? Okay, so let's put it in the ChatGPT blender.
Wow.
And rewrite this, because we need to know specifically what Bob didn't do. Because if I ever have to use this in legal defense for some reason, then we need specifics. Yeah, we have used those in specific cases.
So it helps you get the right input from managers in this particular part of the employee journey or one particular process, but you can imagine that for many others. And in this case, to be clear, you train managers to help them get their own language improved, or are you
refine?
They are refine that, or are you okay? As opposed to you like interviewing them and you helping co-write something, you're actually able to train them up to use it the same way.
Absolutely, train them up, because I want them to be self-sufficient. I don't want to have to redo things for them. I want them to be self-sufficient in those particular tools.
Got it. And then earlier on, you were talking about going back to your earliest career note where you were learning and in that learning mindset, and you're saying how that really matters across the board and even now. Have you thought about, because I hear this concern about the overuse, let's call it, of AI. So one, we talk about data governance, privacy, putting that aside. Another one is that it's making us dumber somehow, right? So the thinking that you should have done, the critical thinking around any of these example use case tasks, that's the claim that actually it's beneficial for you. It stretches your brain to just make new connections and to keep learning, but figuring out the answer to the formula issue like yourself, and that on the altar of efficiency, we're losing neuroplasticity and like learning and this sense of like improving. Instead, we're just brain dumping things and not actually thinking. For example, as a manager, I'm not thinking actually about what Bob did right or what they did wrong or what I expect. And I'm just copy pasting the thing from ChatGPT. How do you think about that? Have you heard that critique?
I have heard that. And this is what I'm going to say, that you hear this about college students rewriting their papers. And I have an 18-year-old. And you know what I told her? I said, you can't dump your paper from ChatGPT. They're going to catch you doing that. And you know what I did tell her? As I go to ChatGPT for your resources, say, provide me resources on this. Because Google has become a dumpster fire. If you go to try to find resources from Google on a particular thing, you're going to be looking for a while, because what it's going to do is it's going to find you the most recent Boolean search terms on things. And the top things, the things that are most frequently searched, are going to be on the top. However, you might be looking for something that's obscure, and you can, ChatGPT will find those obscure things too. And so if you can't find exactly what you're looking for, say no refine search, and it will actually find those obscure things. And I actually taught her how to do that, because if I'm looking for something specific, I will do that. Say, no, I need more resources on, and then say exactly what I'm looking for, and I will go find those resources. I wrote a training for my managers that I'm doing next week. And I was looking specifically for cases on EEO cases on instruction incidents. Those are hard to find, but I wanted the material to be on construction.
Relatable for your audience and specifically for your niche.
And yeah, specific impact. And so it came up with 5 of them. And that's what I wanted. So that's what I was looking for. Now, do I think I would have found that in Google, like right off the top? No, I would not have. But I was looking for those specifically, and I wanted the financial impact of every single one of those cases. That's why I go to ChatGPT for those, because otherwise I would have been looking for probably 4 or 5 hours through Google.
A great example of, and you're still doing the critical thinking of what question to ask, that you want it to be industry specific, that you want to get this particular nuance about or data point about the financial impact, because that's going to make an impact on your audience. And that's all the critical thinking, but you're reducing the time to get that done. So in going along that same path, do you think there are aspects of HR that you should not be using AI for, or automation and getting, even if the efficiencies were there, that you feel like that there's moments where it's important to not put technology front and center?
I like to actually do training with interaction. And do you know why? because I have HR VLR training for my employees, and I've decided it doesn't have nearly as much impact as actually requiring them to participate in class. And I've done training for years. I've done training off and on for years because here's the thing. I wrote training specific to the construction industry to show them how much it's going to cost us if they don't pay attention to certain things.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. Well, you give us that example already, like that you're going for the EEO cases as an example to really make, to bring that home.
It's important. And I used to do this. I used to work for a county and I used to do it with cases in particularly fire departments and stuff like that. Because unless there's a relevant point, there is up to us. And that doesn't apply.
So that's one aspect, which is the instruction material being customized. But I think you're making an additional point on top of that, which is delivery, right? Delivering it live and with interaction in your experience makes a big difference in the learning objective.
Yeah, it does. Because if they interact, it actually, because I used to do a performance management training with my firefighters and I had a calibration session on the performance management. And it was always funny to me whenever they discovered who the tough raiders were versus the easy raiders, because they're all like, I'd rather you manage me because you were an easy raider. It was always the most entertaining thing because I gave them all the same exact criteria to rate somebody on. And they're just, oh, I don't want you to be my manager. And oh, I want you to be my manager, because it was the same exact rating criteria and the same exact evaluation.
Interesting.
Yep.
And you can have that discussion out loud with an interactive kind of session. Can we look ahead a little bit now? So you've given so many examples of how on a personal, like for HR workflows directly, there's all these efficiency gains for you and in different aspects of the employee journey. Management or manager enablement is another example of that. Now, if you look forward, what are you seeing with the HR function in general? What do you think with AI transformations, what skill sets are going to be more valuable and what skill sets are going to be less so in the future?
So the skill sets within AI transformation that are going to be most valuable, no matter what, people have to be able to communicate. I don't care what job you're in. It can be HR. It can be the door greeters at Walmart. If you can't communicate, you're going to have problems. And it can be in sign language. You have to be able to communicate. If you have poor communication skills, it's going to be a problem, okay? That is the number one skill set for human beings, is to be able to communicate.
Because we have to be able to communicate with the AI, right?
Yeah, you got to be able to communicate with the AI. You got to be able to tell the AI what you need out of it. Right. I tell it all these different things. And it's, no, I don't know. I need you to do this. But because even it doesn't understand some things, because it's had all these inputs put into it. Right. And they'll say, it'll give you something else. And it's, no, that's not what I meant. But you have to be direct with it, right?
Yeah.
But outside of that, in regards to for AI to work effectively, you have to be able to have reasonable technology skills. Everybody has to come in having some technology skills. So for those who don't have technology skills, they're going to struggle coming in. I work in construction. It's interesting to me, we put timekeeping in this construction field, and that was the biggest challenge of a lifetime. For our field operators, like our guys who they pretty much just drive a hammer,
yeah.
And getting them to learn how to use to sign in and out of their phones to clock in and out, was they had to learn a password every day because they just kept forgetting it. It would be a challenge for some of those fellas. But for any operator on the other side of this, they have to learn basic technology skills and communication skills. If they don't have those two things, they're gonna struggle.
And let's zoom in a little bit on the HR function itself then. Maybe those things apply because you're talking broadly, right? Communication skills and technology skills and the ability to learn AI. But anything more specifically do you think will be like, or do you think even all the way up to like titles or becoming more important, or the kinds of things that you're doing day to day will be shifting in the HR function?
In the HR function? That's a good question. I think HR, Honestly, I think a lot of HR can be learned. I do, because I've been teaching HR people how to perform the HR functions in different occupations over time. Over the years, people have required degrees in HR. I don't think that's as necessary as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I think that you can walk in from high school and learn a lot of the HR skills that used to be require a degree. I think that maybe once you hit a management level, maybe you need a degree, but I don't know. Because I trained a girl a few years back ago, and she's a director now, and she doesn't have a degree. I think it can be learned. I think a lot of this stuff can be learned. As long as you are able to train on the job, and you can pick up the tech skills and the payroll skills and everything else, I'm not so sure that you need the degree anymore.
Interesting. And then what about from a resourcing perspective? Because something I hear often is we're asked to do more with less, right? From the organization, the teams are leaner or the budgets are leaner and there's more expectations. And maybe an AI transformation is yet another one of those things, governance policies and L&D for the organization. So what do you think about that from a budget and overall, what does a balance look like in terms of the demand from the executive teams of HR? Is that going to be shifting a bit?
We run about 1 to 150, and we seem to run fine. So I think that if you have your managers adequately trained, you should be fine. I think what you have to have is a trained management team.
Ah.
That's where it is. It's where the scales are leaning. It depends on where you have the duties aligned. Because I think some organizations lean on HR to do all this management. And HR is supposed to be doing human resources, which is the recruiting and all that, the work on the other side of the table. They're not supposed to be managing the people in the organization. I've seen that a lot where they've got HR terminating people. They got them directly hiring people. Mm-hmm. They've got them doing all that other stuff. Management should be responsible for hiring people. Management should be responsible for terminating people. Management should be responsible for all of those decisions, not HR. HR should be responsible for negotiating benefits. HR should be responsible for deciding the compensation scales, those sorts of back operations things. The equity in the organization is on HR, right? That those sorts of decisions, okay? Not the management of the people.
And then the leverage, using management as a leverage point, so enabling management as much as possible so they can do all that is the key. So then with some of these AI transformations that we've been talking about, you personally getting into, how does that feel like it's going in throughout your HR team itself? Is everyone else changing their workflows, experimenting in the same way? Are you pushing them too, or just letting time?
I think they're slowly starting to pick it up. I've been slowly training them on the AI tool. They're not as quick to adapt to it as I am. And it just might be because I'm a techie, but that's okay. Everybody's going to adapt to it, I think, at their own pace, to be honest with you.
So then you're okay with that. So if you think about how that adoption happens and you look ahead, I'm going to ask you to peer into your crystal ball here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like your team or an HR team that is future-proof and is really effective a few years down the line look like for you? Will that 1 to 150 hold? Will the specific types of jobs that people are doing and the titles potentially shift? Or will your expectations keep going up around leveraging new tools with every passing year?
I think our 1 to 150 is going to hold. I think we're going to have to leverage new tools. I think that we're going to continue to integrate new tools into what we have. I work with my COO a lot on that stuff because we have to integrate some of our systems to make us more efficient. So that's how we're operating at this point. We've slowly done that. So that's what's made us a little more efficient over time. Because when I got here, we were multiple systems, just like slowly plugging things in all over the place. So yeah, that's what's made a drastic difference.
Actually, related to that, because you're talking about operations, something we talked about the other week was stuck with me. You said that AI isn't replacing HR here, but it raised the floor. Mm-hmm. Things like documentation and like support mm-hmm. about that, this concept of raising the floor for your whole department.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not going to replace us. There's no way. And that's the thing that I think that was a fear that I heard from different HR folks.
Oh, yeah.
And so if they're going to replace HR, I keep hearing this, it's going to replace recruiters. And I'm like, there's no way it's going to replace recruiters. I could not see that ever happening because I don't know how that would happen because I have to aggressively go find people. Like I said earlier, I had to put in a whole entire Boolean search string to find this particular candidate that I'm looking for. And that a chatbot is not going to replace me in that form or fashion because it's a very complicated position to find. So AI is not going to replace that. However, me using AI helped me find that. It's fascinating to me for people to worry about that. It's like they're creating worry that doesn't need to exist. Also,
and I think there's a big overlap between the people who see that and the people who see all the governance and data issues and the, oh, it's going to kill my brain. There's a confluence of these various factors that kind of get you to put you in the back seat in terms of adoption.
Yeah, I think I'm in the opposite school. It's killing my frustration.
Ah.
So if I get frustrated with something, I'm like, I'll go ask ChatGPT what it thinks. I can't seem to find this. Do you have a better idea?
So speaking of that, if you're brainstorming, or are there any ideas that are percolating going forward about other efficiencies or other opportunities that you see ahead, maybe in collaboration with your COO or with your team for any aspect?
Sometimes I just ask it to research trends for me. Do you have a trend analysis for this? Today I asked it. I look for at a turnover analysis for me because even ADP has a full turnover analysis. And I'm just like, because it's starting to integrate AI. And ADP is slow to adapt to anything, I promise. So yeah, it's just all it's doing for me is it's creating serious efficiencies for me. It's not doing anything that I find negative at this point. And sometimes I laugh because it makes my emails too wordy. And I'm like, no, that is way too wordy. Simplify that.
Are there other frustration points? What else are you think about? And maybe as the technology keeps evolving and getting better, are there other use cases, frustration points that you have today that you feel like it will get to? Or another way to look at it is like if you think about you or your team's time spent on a weekly basis, are there things that you imagine, if not today, like at some point in the future, you'll end up redoing in some fashion with AI?
Oh, I'm sure I'll come up with something. I just haven't come up with it. It's something on a weekly basis I'll think of. I wonder if it could do this for me. But like I said, I wrote that training last week because I'm like, nah, I need use cases for this or I need this. I did ask it to come up with some specific training exercises for me because I was like, what are some best exercises for this or best exercises for that? Because I needed some critical thinking exercises because that training only took me 2 hours to write all together. Whenever I know that when I used to write training, it would take me a lot more time. So it's stuff like that, serious time savers. And the training is going to probably take me 2 hours to conduct, but I would much rather conduct the training so that I have full attention and I have them engaged than them, like I said, doing actually online training. It's a 45-minute training session if they do the BLR training session, and I'm not sure they're engaged. I want to make sure they are.
I think you can be sure they're disengaged. I don't think anyone who does one of these online training,
so
myself included, you're just going through it, especially if it's just on from a base level, like a compliance kind of thing. But I think it's an incredible opportunity, right? It's almost like having the right teacher will have someone think about the curriculum completely differently. And that's the opportunity for any kind of training that you do in HR. And I think a takeaway for me is that anytime you're doing a training, you should think about how you can become like world-class at engaging your managers or your audience with the training because of the tools that are available to you, which otherwise, to be fair, yes, you need to be maybe an experienced 100% L&D trainer, but you can do that much. You can get to that world-class kind of outcome more so yourself. But just to close out, I want to ask you to share some advice that you have because one, you've worked in HR in several different industries and two, you're seeing the evolution, like you said, week over week of how workflows and things are shifting. And you also mentioned how you're not sure if the college degree in the function is as important. So overall, if you're talking to someone who's young and trying to get into HR for the first time or considering it, what advice would you have for them?
I have a couple pieces of advice. Number one, don't stick to one language. because you know what? Learned French, which is definitely not useful. And so if you can learn Spanish, do it. Number two, my other piece of advice to you is that I think that don't stop learning. Don't stop reading. And don't keep your reading to one topic. I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek. I'm a big fan of other leadership development books, but also self-help books are fantastic. You can never stop helping yourself. But podcasts are great, but always keep your mind open. Don't stop learning. I'm constantly learning new things. I'm not a spring chicken. I've been doing this over 20 years, but I keep learning. And that's why I've been able to pick all this stuff up pretty quick, because I think that if you, the minute you stop learning, you shut your mind. You shut your mind to picking up new things. And the only way that you're going to keep advancing in your career or you're going to be of any use to any organization is if you keep learning things. And then the other things that I think about constantly is that technology is not going to stop evolving. And it's in the thing that made me laugh one day is that I saw somebody post that it was going to AI was going to replace HR. And I said, no, I saw this film. It was the Terminator. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to replace our jobs entirely because it's not going to communicate like we do. It's just not.
Yeah, and that piece of advice might be something that's, or point of view, it's as relevant for someone who's mid-career and is thinking about that as well. But I think maybe part of the confidence you have in that is from engaging with these tools on a daily and weekly basis. So you get what's possible and not possible, or with the tools, because you're in it every day. That's another reason to just try these things and see, get to your own conclusions versus just reading headlines and staying away.
And I think the last thing I would say about it is if you fear it, then hop on to LinkedIn and make some friends on LinkedIn and ask them what they've done with it, because that's what the groups seem to be asking is, what are you doing with it? I can tell you. A lot of other people can tell you what they're doing with it. And most of them aren't doing anything dreadful.
And with that said, I want to thank you for this conversation, Diana. This has been great. We've gone into a lot of how you, a lot of the specific use cases you've personally used AI for and where you draw the line. And also, it's not that you don't think about the potential negative aspects, whether it's data governance or how is this going to impact jobs, both for your function and the ones that you're enabling, or what it means for managers. And we had some insight about maybe where the function is headed a bit, right? So I want to thank you again for the conversation and for everyone who's out there and is looking to future-proof their own organizations and their own HR functions. Good luck, and I hope you took something away from this. See you on the next one. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.